Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol live on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hey, I can talk loud now again. No one will knock on my hotel room door. I don't know if it was. Susan said that somebody was knocking, but I don't, you know, I'm not sure. I didn't hear it. I was busy doing a show. I was talking to Big Wit. I was talking to Big Sexy. Now we're going to talk to Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. I am broadcasting live from the historic Midland Theater, one of the absolute gems of Kansas City. I'm looking up right now at the ceiling, at the chandelier. It's so beautiful in here. It's just wonderful. And now check that off, another on the bucket list. I'm broadcasting live from the Midland Theater, where later on I will be the co-MC with Dustin Colquitt, who will join us at 9:30. I'll be the co-MC of the big WHB 100-year anniversary celebration. Drake is standing in front of the wonderful staircase like he's the captain of the Titanic. Hopefully the show doesn't sink tonight. That would be horrible. But that's fine. That's a terrible reference for me to have right now. But, man, just looking around, this is just...
You know, man, what, Stephen?
This is place is a work of art, Nate.
It's funny that you're saying all this because I was just talking to Jeff Chedia here, and Jeff was telling me you've never been to a show at the Midland.
Never been.
And I was saying, oh, man, it's my favorite venue to see a concert in all of Kansas City. So I was looking up pictures online to try to show him how amazing the place is. I mean, it really is. Like, it's one of those places you walk inside, you're like, man, this is a true gem of Kansas City.
Yeah, I wonder, Stephen, I feel like this is like the night of the Oscars.
Right.
And you were like backstage trying to get it all together. I was asking Nate what the dress code was tonight, and I was hoping to show up in shorts, but it sounds like I'm going to be underdressed. Like, you're going to be the pimp, the Mac Daddy pimp of the night. So I gotta raise my game a little bit.
Yeah, down in the VIP area where you will be with the celebrities rubbing elbows. Cocktail attire. Yes, I will have a sports coat. I will have a new outfit tonight, so I'm very excited for that. But yes, dress up, and we're going to have a great time tonight. We're glad you're going to be there. You heard me mention I had your guy, Jason Whitlock, on the show in the 6 o'clock hour, and we were reminiscing about when we hosted a show together here on Sports Radio 810. He's going to be there tonight. So
he's going to be there? Whitlock's in town?
He's on a flight right now.
Okay.
He's heading to Kansas City. He's going to be looking for you, he said. So, you know.
I'll be harder to find than him. He will stand out. Put it that way. When Whitlock shows up, he will stand out for sure.
That's right. He's going to be here. So we're really, really excited. And you've been a big part of Sports Radio 810 WHB for a long time. So we're glad that you're going to be part of the festivities tonight. It's going to be great. And I just we're very excited. It's not just going to be, you know, sports. It's going to be entertainment. It's going to be music. It's going to be fun. And it's going to be a great show. And so hopefully all the people that won tickets are going to come down here and celebrate with us and have just a great night of fun and entertainment. And so Nate Bucati's going to be up on stage. Gary Lezak's going to be on stage. A lot of surprises that we have that we can't talk about because they're surprises. They wouldn't be surprises if we told you what they were. Of course, I'm staying at the beautiful Hilton President Hotel, and that's where I was this morning during the first half of the show. Now I've made my way over to the Midland. Once again, thank you to the boss of the show, Susan St. John, who helped me get the equipment over here because I'm still dealing with the back issues. But I'm going to go see Dr. Brad a little bit later at Mission Wellness and get one final adjustment, the final adjustment I need to get through the show tonight here at the Midland. And so, Jeff, we've got lots to talk about with the Chiefs and with the NFL right now. curious, what's, you know, you've been around the different camps and everything else. What are you picking up? What's the buzz about the Chiefs? What are people saying about Kansas City and some of the other camps and from some of the other people that you've been talking to?
Well, the buzz is there's still a lot of respect for what this team is and can be. And, you know, I was joking in Denver with some people on that staff, and I said sometimes when you listen to the radio or you hear talk around here about, you know, Tyreek being gone and just sort of the kind of the people being upset about the national narrative about what's going to happen to this offense without Tyreek Hill, how this defense going to be taking a step back, that for the first time and probably since Mahomes has been here, there's a little bit chip on the shoulder in town, a little bit of defiance of like, okay, people are kind of seeing us as the underdog now. And a guy from the Denver said, look, they ain't the underdogs over there. Like, they still got the coach. They still got the quarterback. They've won the division 6 times in a row. Like, they're not the underdog. Like, we're the ones who are trying to figure it out, trying to climb the mountain, trying to get to where they are. So that's really the vibe that I've gotten from a lot of different people. It's, you know, obviously, I think the only NFC team I saw was the Lions. Yeah, I went to Indianapolis and Baltimore and Denver so far outside of Kansas City. And so yeah, all those teams were trying to put their best foot forward and trying to, you know, trying to make the most of new additions and trying to put some difficulties, some struggles behind them from last year. And I think that it's going to be a fun ride. But I think everybody looks at Kansas City, at least in the AFC, as being a team that still you have to contend with.
Did you hear many thoughts on Commissioner Goodell when you were in Denver? Or was that...
Who called him that?
The new owner.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I missed that press conference.
I don't know if you heard that, Stephen. He got up and he said, I'd like to thank Commissioner Goodell.
You would hope that they'd had some conversation at some point before they sign off on this deal and had the vote, right?
Yeah. You drop a few $1 billion on a team, you know, you can call them whatever you want, right?
That was Rob Walden.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess, hey, when you're part of that family, you can say what you want to say.
Right.
I'm bringing $4 billion to the table, or 4 or 5, whatever it is. No, I didn't call him that, but I was there before they lost one of their receivers when Tim Patrick went down. So they were, you know, pretty excited about what they have going. I'm sure they still are. But, you know, just that's the reality of training camp and football in general, that people are going to go down and you have to weather the storm. And so we'll see what happens with them. But again, there was a lot of energy in every place I went to for varying reasons.
Okay, so what are the storylines right now? And since you brought up the Ravens, and I know you wrote about the Ravens defense here recently, there's some drama with the Chicago Bears and the Chiefs. We'll be playing at the Bears on Saturday at noon, and so we will get a chance to take a look at the Chiefs for the first time this preseason in Chicago on Saturday. But their all-pro linebacker, Roquan Smith, he wrote a long essay that he posted on the social media saying that he wants to be traded. He's not appreciated. The Bears have removed him from the PUP list. They did that yesterday. A day after, in a written statement, the 25-year-old linebacker requested a trade after the contract negotiations reached an impasse. And so people speculating, well, who would trade for him, who would need him? Baltimore was one of the first teams that came up in different circles. And so who knows what's going to happen. But first, Roquan Smith, what is he as a player? What is his value? How do you think this thing's going to play out?
Well, he's a super talented player. I mean, there's no question about it. I think that he was one of the only players in the last couple of years to have 100 tackles and like 2 sacks and an interception. And so that speaks to his ability, speaks to his productivity. But this also feels a lot like a combination of a player who wants to maximize his value, much as Orlando Brown did when he was trying to negotiate with the Chiefs in the offseason. And also a team with a first-year general manager who's trying to make a statement and trying to build something. And it's very hard. I can understand Ryan Poles feeling like, do I really want to break the bank with a linebacker on my first big deal as the general manager of the Chicago Bears when this team is just come out of salary cap hell, has all kinds of holes to fill, They've got a franchise quarterback that they're trying to develop in JT Fields. I mean, Justin Fields. And they don't have a great receiving core. They don't have a great offensive line. They've got to do a lot of things, spend a lot of money, and be very strategic in what they do. And when you look at the position of linebacker, inside linebacker, you know, off-ball linebackers, not linebackers who are pass rushers, who make up the bulk of the highest-paid players at the position right now, they're kind of becoming what running backs have become, in that the game has become more about what happens on the edge. It's more about edge rushing. It's more about corners. Even safeties have gotten a lot more attention lately as far as being combination type players. Guys like Tyrann Mathieu can cover and blitz and do all that stuff. And so the guys who play linebacker, even though you play it for a franchise that's been iconic at that position,
yeah,
with Brian Urlacher and Singletary and all those guys, Dick Butkus, you look at some of the best teams in the NFL, they're not killing it at that position. Can you name who played linebacker for the Rams last year? Before Bobby Wagner showed up, you know, you know, we know what the Chiefs, until they drafted Nick Bolton, were doing at that spot in Willie Gay. And those guys, whether fine young players, are not all pro players. You know, you look at the Bills, you look at, you go down the line. And so the Buccaneers are the only team that I look at who's really invested a lot in that position and reaped the rewards of it with Levante David. But it really is a position of it's kind of taking a step back now. And I can understand if Ryan Poles doesn't want to pay a premium for that.
You think they'll trade him?
Because
they don't have to, right? Like, they could just tell him, hey.
Well, they don't have to, but I look at, they're very much in a position like the Chiefs were with Tyreek Hill, where his value, he's a young player, he's been productive. There are teams and defenses that, like the Ravens, you know, that would value that. The Steelers are a team that would value someone like him. I mean, he's not going to have a market out there. And if you can get a decent haul from him, certainly. I think in the grand scheme of things, the Bears fan base is not going to be freaking out if they let Roquan Smith go and they end up finding draft picks out of it and a way to improve their team that way.
So I'm looking at this article by Jeremy Fowler at ESPN. And he comes up with a list of 10 teams who could afford Roquan Smith under the salary cap and who might be willing to trade for him. And I don't agree with a few of the teams. Well, one of the teams is the Kansas City Chiefs, and says, calls between general managers to gauge interest are easy, and Poles spent years under Brett Veach before landing in Chicago. It doesn't hurt either side to check in, though the Chiefs are happy with Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, who are on infinitely cheaper contracts than Smith will be. Roughly 15% of the team's overall salary cap is dedicated to the defensive back seven, $32.3 million. So allocating a big contract to a linebacker wouldn't hinder the franchise. I don't – and also, you know, Seattle, Atlanta, Miami, Denver, like I said, the Baltimore Ravens. The Detroit Lions, Jeff, they could be aggressive, but I don't see the Chiefs – Chiefs aren't looking for that, right? The Chiefs aren't looking to bring in someone that's trying to get a bigger deal. They've already dealt with, like, when someone asked me, what about Kareem Hunt? Well, first of all, he wants a new contract, and the Chiefs aren't giving out new contracts too easy these days.
Yeah.
And number two, Clark Hunt, as long as he's the owner, I'm thinking Kareem Hunt's not coming back in the family. And so end that. And I don't think they, you know, would they be looking for defensive talent? Sure. Are they looking for a guy that's demanding a new contract? No. No.
And they're very happy with what they have there. They have the best situation you could have for
damn
a team
right.
that's trying to contend, which is to say you have young linebackers on the cheap. I mean, there's certain spots you want to be able to have bargains. And so it's ironic, and this is no knock on Jeremy Fowler, but most of the teams that you rattled off there are teams that aren't winning right now.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying. You sort of look at the marketplace, and the teams that are winning – kind of, I'm trying to rack my brain here to see somebody aside from Tampa. I mean, I was talking on our podcast last night, and I said the worst thing that could happen to Roquan Smith is Devondre Campbell at Green Bay, who showed up. You know, he played in Houston. He was a fine player, came in cheap, and became an all-pro linebacker. If you can find that kind of player, you're doing really well. And a lot of, you know, it's just the world is shifting. when it comes to defensive players and what you can do with them, what you need to do with them. And so I get that every time a big name is out there and available, that it's always not just the Chiefs fans, but any team's going to be like, hey, we should get this guy because he wants out. But there are ramifications that come with that, that you don't want to, again, invest that kind of money in a player who's not going to, even though he's a good player, is not going to impact you in the same way another player who's going to be just as expensive, if not more, could if he was added to your roster.
He mentions the Cowboys, too. I can see that.
Well, even they've got a bunch of linebackers down there.
Right, but still, I can see, Jerry Jones doing something that doesn't make sense.
Because it'll make a splash. Get everybody excited,
Yeah, we got Roquan Smith now. I could absolutely see that.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And maybe he just stays in Chicago. We don't know. But we'll see the Chiefs taking on the Bears on Saturday. And so I'm curious, and I don't know how much you've been able to gauge from different teams, but I know different teams are handling the preseason in different ways now that they're are just three preseason games. Traditionally, we see things ramp up, where the star players, your blue chip players don't play as much the first game, that it increases a little bit to the second game. And then that third game is always like the dress rehearsal where they play the first half and maybe the first series of the third quarter. And then all the first string, all the starters sit in the fourth game. Are you sensing, is there any difference in how teams are approaching the preseason and the ability to evaluate players now that there's only three preseason games?
I feel like it's more, obviously it's more of a team-by-team basis, but I feel like more teams are trying to get as many evaluations done in that first game now. I get a ton of emails from around the league from different press conferences and different coaches talking, and it seems the theme I've seen a lot of is that you're not going to see a lot of starters playing at all in these early games, and just trying to make sure you can get a good look at these players, and then you get that opportunity to get your starters going later on down the road, whether that's the second or third game, depending on what team you are. But for the most part, this has become more of an evaluation period and less of a concern about, hey, can we make sure Aaron Rodgers gets X amount of snaps? Now, in a place like Cleveland, where they obviously have a lot of different dynamics in play, it gets a little tricky. But for the most part, yeah, it's about trying. Because there's so many players in camp now, and over the last couple of years, you've seen it with, especially the way COVID impacted stuff, teams had to become really creative in how they were evaluating players. So I don't mind it as much. I look at the Raiders. They played Josh Jacobs, I think, a whole half in or at least most of the first half in their Hall of Fame game. But, yeah, I think for the most part, it's all about evaluating younger players.
Well, that's what makes this preseason actually interesting for me as a Chiefs, if you're a Chiefs fan, because they've got a big rookie class, and it's obvious. Like you don't even have to go to camp. I haven't been at camp, but I listened to Steven all last week. I listened to you. Every NFL insider that happens to come through camp, they all hear things, and it's clear the Chiefs like this group of rookies they've got. They feel really good about several of these players. But it's one thing to feel really good about them when they're going against each other. You know what I mean? Like how much do they really know about these rookies that they like a lot versus how much they'll even know after Saturday's game?
Well, they'll know. It's hard to gauge it because there's only so much you're doing in preseason, so much you're showing, you're not getting attacked. But, yeah, you can get a better feel for, hey, how does George Karloftis handle himself, when he's getting blocked by somebody who's not on the same team? How does Trent McDuffie handle himself when he's not seeing a guy that's been running the same routes against him for the last, two, 3 weeks? Sky Moore, how's he get off the line of scrimmage now that someone's in his face and who's really trying to win a job on the other side of this thing? Yeah, all that stuff matters. And look, it's every team feels highly about their rookies this time of year because, they've invested a lot in them. They spend a lot of time looking at them, and they believe in them. And I really like what the Chiefs have. I mean, what I saw in training camp were all those guys were really showing what they can become. But yeah, I'm not going to really be judging any of them until it's week one.
okay.
in week two, and when they're really out there doing it, because that's when you're really going to know. That's when they're going to, that's when they're going to see real schemes, people targeting them, people with game plans against them, and you can see how they respond.
So you spent some time with the Ravens. You wrote about the defense. When you look at the contenders in the AFC, where do they fit in?
Well, if they're healthy, they should be in the mix. They would have been in the mix last year if they'd had, they lose Marcus Peters, they lose Gus Edwards, they lose J.K. Dobbins, Lamar Jackson gets banged up and he's playing hurt down the stretch. I mean, all this stuff happened. This team was still 8-9 and trying to find a way to get in the playoffs. They lost out to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who won one more game, or one and a half more games with a tie. But ultimately, it's still a team that has a lot of championship variables to it. And I like that. I like the defensive coordinator that came in, Mike McDonald. I have love for him because he was at Michigan last year and did impressive things with their defense and helped that team win a Big Ten title. I like that what they have in the secondary, going out and signing Marcus Williams from New Orleans, drafting Kyle Hamilton. They've got a ton of players. As long as Peters and Marlon Humphrey are healthy at corner, they should be strong there. So, look, I like them even more because of what's happening with Cleveland. If Deshaun Watson was going to be able to play at least 11 games, I would say the Browns would be a favorite to make the playoffs. Now it looks like he's not going to be around that much, if at all. And so Baltimore has one less team to worry about. And I would assume that they will be able to contend with Cincinnati for the AFC North now.
So you mentioned the injuries toward the end of the season to Lamar Jackson. I was very skeptical his first year or two in the league because of how many times he ran the ball. You see quarterbacks who can run in the league, but you don't see quarterbacks who run that much. He's got 615 career carries under his belt now. I've been very impressed at his ability to stay healthy despite that, because he's so slippery, he doesn't seem to take many direct hits. Is it starting to catch up to him, or will it start to catch up to him now that he's done it for this many years?
I would guess he still has 2 to 3 years before he really hits that wall, because he's, 25 now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still young.
Still really young. And I look at, I compare him to Michael Vick and I compare him to Cam Newton. And Cam Newton was a way more physical runner than he was. And he went, 10 years before he really started to break down?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that stuff was shoulder problems, more so than leg stuff. And so I would think that he could still make it happen for a couple, 2-3 more years, which I'm sure is a big part of their negotiation. Like, they're trying to figure out how they can bet against him becoming a victim to an injury that could really make that contract an anchor around the organization. But, man, it's funny. I tell people all the time, and, Sorin obviously is, we have this big debate about him as a quarterback, and I know he's a polarizing figure, but when he's right, that team is electric. And so that is, as much as people talk about what they have at receiver and receivers not wanting to go there, I feel like having J.K. Dobbins back healthy, he just came with the pup list, having Gus Edwards back healthy, they signed Mike Davis, who's a solid running back. You've got a lot of people who can help. I think they're going to get back to what they were in 2019, 2020, which is, let's not worry so much about how we can impress people with our passing game. We have to throw the football at some point. We know that. But let's get back into being. Let's knock people around. Let's do what the Eagles were doing last year with Jalen Hurts. And let's just be a physical, defensive-first football team.
All right. We've got Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com in studio. He's going to be down here with us celebrating the WHB 100-year anniversary. And hopefully you will be, too, at the Midland tonight. I am broadcasting live from the Midland Theater, where the Drake is enjoying some delicious Oreos. Breakfast of Champions, and he was kind enough to also bring me, that's right, an ice-cold bottle of Diet Dr. Pepper. The day is off to a good start. Live at the Midland, we'll be back after this with more from Jeff Chedia. And also coming up, don't forget, Gary Pinkle at 9:05 and then Dustin Colquitt at 9:30. All that and more between now and 10 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me remind you that even if you're not attending the WHB 100-year celebration tonight, the anniversary celebration, you can still get involved by going to 810WHB.com and clicking on the silent auction. And, of course, it's very, very important because we have a live auction with the Nigro brothers tonight and the silent auction, which ends tonight at 10 o'clock. The money benefits the ALS Association Mid-America Chapter, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Kansas City, Kansas City Chiefs Ambassadors, Victory Project, and Sharewaves. And so if you still want to be involved and you want to make sure that these great organizations get money, plenty of money for their wonderful causes, go to 810WHB.com. I've told you about some of the items. There's one package, which I can't believe is available. An autograph, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce helmet with two lower-level tickets to see the rematch between the Chiefs and the Bills. There's, for a golf lover, you can bid on a package, an autographed Tom Watson Callaway Epic Flash 5-wood and the Golf Stable Tour Experience, full bag club fitting, four rounds of golf at Loch Lloyd, four rounds of golf at the National, four rounds of golf at Lionsgate, and a $200 gift certificate to Pierpont's. You can bid on a Bobby Witt Jr. autographed batting helmet that goes along with four crown seats to a Royals game. You can bid on an AFC Championship signed game jersey, game worn by Mecole Hardman. And how about this? I don't know. What would you bid on this, Jeff Chedia? A four-course wining and dining experience for eight people with me, Tim Grunhard, and Michael Garozzo at Garozzo's. Would you be interested in that,
man,
Jeff Chedia?
I might take out a loan for that.
Right. See, man, well, that's it's worth it.
Commerce Banker.
It's worth it. And you know, Garozzo explains every dish, every meal. Tim Grunhard will enjoy, you'll enjoy hearing stories from Tim Grunhard. I'll be there just to moderate. It'll be a wonderful time. All kinds of great items. Go to 810WHB.com and you can bid to get any of them. There's more. I can't read them all right now, but there's more, including a Kansas basketball package, a Sporting Kansas City package. You can also bid on Nate's package here, it says, which is, I don't know that. Just a few bids are accepted on that one, and then
small package.
Well, it's a small package, but still, it should get back lots of money. We do. You can bid on increments of 25 cents if you like. Oh, that made me laugh. That hurt my back, though. So come on down. And again, thanks to the President Hotel for hosting me. And as I am working down here as the MC, we're going to have the sound check and the walkthrough and the rehearsal coming up in a little bit. So very excited. And I'm live here at the Midland right now. And I would ask my friend Anthony Gialdi to stop texting me profanity-laced text messages while I'm on the air. Thank you, Anthony. So let's move on and talk about – so you mentioned the Browns and Deshaun Watson, which – okay, so now the story takes another turn because Roger – is it Goodell, you said? Goodell? How do you say his name? Goodell. Roger Goodell has now said that you know, he doesn't agree with the 6-game suspension, and his appeal is he thinks a year. Roger Goodell explained the league's stance on pursuing a longer suspension, saying, you know, he said the behavior warrants a full season ban, including the postseason. And so now the appeal hearing will be overseen by New Jersey Attorney General Peter C. Harvey. Goodell could have heard the appeal himself, but the league designated Harvey instead. Goodell said he doesn't have a timeline from Harvey as for when the decision will come. What's your reaction now to the NFL and Roger Goodell's stance on this, Jeff?
Yeah, I've been pretty consistent about this, and you know, I covered police stories when I was starting out as a journalist, and so I have a very, I guess, unique take on this, opposed to other sports writers. Like, I just feel like evidence matters, and I feel like when you haven't had a grand jury, haven't had two grand juries indict you, when you've had a judge with a pretty respected career look at your case and come down with a penalty. And now that we're going to the appeal process, and I understand that the league is very clear about the personal conduct policy and what a violation is and how they want to treat that. But if you begin to dismiss all this stuff, you put a process in place that you're going to just say, okay, that doesn't matter as much as he embarrassed us. We have to do something. We have to show people that we don't tolerate this kind of stuff. I don't know how fair that is. I don't know how fair it is to say one judge came down and said it should be six games, and then you're trying to find somebody else to say it should be more. It feels as if it's going to be a year now. And I'm not trying to sit here and say, oh, Deshaun Watson is a victim and they're coming after him. This is unfair. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying there's a process here that doesn't seem to matter as much. And if you're not going to follow the process, why do you have it in place in the first place?
I think you make a really good point there. And I'm I think Deshaun Watson seems like a reprehensible character right now. Like, I wouldn't want him on my team, and I wouldn't want to cheer for him. So I'm putting that's just my personal opinion. That's how I feel about him right now after reading all the stuff. Yeah. But so that like, that's where I stand on that. But this is the part I think people are missing a little bit when they get wound up in that part of it. When you're a company and you've got employees and you have some sort of disciplinary issue, right? And then you decide, okay, we think that he should get this. We think you guys think he should get this. Let's hire an independent judge. They usually call it an arbitrator, right? Yeah, this is arbitration. Yeah. You know, you do it in baseball all the time. It's like if we think we should pay him $10 million and they think he wants $20 million. Okay, we hire an independent judge to decide, you know, what he should really get. Okay, we've both agreed on this. We've hired this judge. She's independent. Now we're going to let her do her job. Then she does her job, and we go, yeah, we don't like the job she did, so we're going to do something different anyway. Well, then what did you even hire her for?
Yeah.
If you weren't going to listen to what she said and you weren't going to follow it, what did you even hire her for? That would be the stance that and this is the part where I think if you're the players, you don't want to stand up for anything that Deshaun Watson might have done. You don't want to be on his side, but at the same time, like, what's the precedent here? You guys are just going to hire an independent judge, and then if the judge doesn't do what you like, you're going to do what you want anyway.
Yeah, and the slippery slope, and the NFL has been on the slippery slope before, which is also why I bring it up, is that if you're going to constantly be trying to placate the public and you're constantly trying to make people aware of how much you don't agree with or accept or tolerate something that was alleged. Let's go back to make this clear. It was alleged. It was not proven, and it wasn't a conviction here. It was alleged. That doesn't mean to minimize what the women said or to minimize their experience, whatever they're feeling at this point. And people tend to get all this stuff wrapped up in together. And so you can't really have an honest conversation about this because of that, or a candid conversation. If you look at it from that standpoint, yes, you've put a system in place that seemed to be fair. And again, if you begin to go down this road of let's just try to make sure people are aware, this isn't Ray Rice again. We're not going to just slap somebody on the wrist and then have it blow up in our face. I think it's dangerous, man. And I know that I know the numbers are really shocking. I know, as you said, he sounds very reprehensible, but there is always the possibility within the legal system that somebody is innocent. There's always the possibility that somebody is telling the truth, and that you can point to, as much as we can point to Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein on the extreme of this, that of what he could have been in all this. I can point you to the to the Duke lacrosse team when they were accused of raping a girl years ago. And the immediate response was, look at these frat boys, college kids, rich kids, taking advantage of a young woman. And in that case, it wasn't the case. And so all I'm saying is that when you get into a situation where you're talking about domestic violence, he said, they said, in this situation, I do think it's okay to look at it from the player's point of view and say, what if he didn't do all these things they're saying he's doing, or at least to the extent, which is what I'm saying. Six games to me, based on what Sue Robinson wrote in her report, going through all the evidence, seemed to indicate that at least she was seeing some things that didn't make what he did criminal. Now, is it embarrassing? Yeah. Is it humiliating? Yes. Is it reprehensible to a certain extent? Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's just, I don't like the precedent of saying, if anything sounds ugly, we're throwing you out of this league, you know, for a long time.
And don't you think that a lot of this is Goodell's reaction is based on public opinion?
Yes.
And what the reaction was to this first ruling? Because how many people wrote, now it's up to Roger Goodell?
Yep.
Does the NFL care about women? Does the NFL care about what their players do? We'll find out, you know, what will Roger Goodell, what will the NFL do here? And I you know, if there would not have been public outrage to the six-game suspension or any pushback, I think you never hear from the NFL and they just move on. But there was, and everyone pointed their fingers in the direction of Roger Goodell. Columnists wrote about it. Fans posted about it. And so he felt that pressure, and he said, well, I got to do something.
Yeah.
So let's go for a year, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a big part of this. I mean, that's the main part of it. And I keep saying this. I understand that they have wide latitude with the personal conduct policy to make these kinds of decisions. And it almost feels like they put the whole process in place just so they could get back to him taking advantage of those powers. And I'd rather have you just use the powers, put down the suspension you want to put down, and then let's move forward. It doesn't.
Why did you go through the whole dog and pony show of an independent judge in the first place? If you were gonna, suspend him for a year, suspend him for a year.
Yeah,
exactly. To gauge public opinion.
Yeah, and you raised a really important point here as far as the female aspect of this, because we're living in a Me Too era now, and I think a lot of women have been able to tell their stories, which are just horrible stories about how they've been treated in the workplace by men, throughout the world by men. And I think it's important to hear those stories. But you also have to understand that there's also a long history in this country of black men being thrown in jail, being killed for people alleging things. And that's where I come at it from, which is it's very easy to forget that aspect of it. And when you get on this slope of, if somebody's going to say something about you doing something bad, and there's enough people who think it's true, as a black male, it's a dangerous place to be in this world. And so that's what I think is part of the conversation, too, that no one ever really talks about.
And I also think, and this separate from, you know, what we're talking about here, from a football perspective, I still think the Cleveland Browns are idiots. They're morons. Because it's one thing when you already have a player that's going through this, you invite this into your organization, you give up all these draft picks to pay all this money, and there's a good chance this guy ain't even going to play this year. And who knows, then, I don't care how talented you are, if you miss 2 years in the NFL, there's no guarantee you're going to come back and be the same. I mean, Houston didn't have any choice. He was already on the team. They had to deal with this stuff. Why would you invite this into your organization?
Yeah, well, you know, I look at it this way. That's the cost of trying to get a franchise quarterback. And it's easy to forget now amidst all this other drama that's going on here that's probably going to go on for the next few months. I'm sure the NFLPA is not going to stand still and just let this slide. So there'll be a lot of court talk for the next few months. But Deshaun Watson was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL before all this stuff started. And the Cleveland Browns have been one of the worst teams in the NFL since they came back to Cleveland or put that franchise up in whatever it was, 2001. And so they've invested a lot of money in their franchise. I don't see it so much as a, as a moral decision. I think they felt as if, and I say this a lot too, before this happened to Deshaun Watson, he was looked upon, or not just in Houston, around the NFL, in the same way Patrick Mahomes is looked upon here. Like, if this had happened to Patrick Mahomes, you would have said there's no way you would have ever, ever imagined this happening. That's how people saw Deshaun Watson before this happened. So there was enough, I think, evidence there of him being a pretty good person, an infallible person to a certain extent, before it happened. So I think they're betting on that, betting on him having learned some lessons, and also understanding that if you want to win a championship in this league, end of the day, people ain't caring about how you do it. They just care about that you did it.
We have Jeff Chedia in studio back after this on WHP. Hey, Kansas City, Stephen St. John here, and I would love it if you join me for the Walk to End Alzheimer's here in Kansas City. It's going to be Sunday, October 2nd at the National World War I Museum and Memorial. I'll be there as the MC of the walk. I'm going to have a walk team, and I'll take part in the walk. And next week, I'm going to give you some information about how you can be a member of my walk team. But if you'd like to go ahead and register, just go to alzwalkkc.org. alzwalkkc.org. When you take part in the walk, you raise funds and awareness for a breakthrough in the fight against Alzheimer's and all other dementia. And that's something that's very near and dear to my heart. So it's time for you to come out and take part in this wonderful walk. It's full of flowers. Each is carried by someone committed to ending the disease. And it's time to add your flower to the fight. Join me on Sunday, October 2nd, for the Walk to End Alzheimer's in Kansas City at the National World War I Museum and Memorial. Register today at alzwalkkc.org.
Did you know that Greenlight Dispensary was voted the number one dispensary in Missouri and the number one loyalty program in Missouri? It doesn't surprise me one bit. If you're looking for the best cannabis experience in Kansas City, go to Greenlight Dispensary and visit them online at greenlightdispensary.com. Did you know that Greenlight Dispensary was voted the number one dispensary in Missouri and the number one loyalty program in Missouri? It doesn't surprise me one bit. If you're looking for the best cannabis experience in Kansas City, go to Greenlight Dispensary and visit them online at greenlightdispensary.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John live at the Midland. We got Jeff Chedia with Nate Bucchetti back in studio. All right, Jeff, we got a couple of minutes left. Saturday, it's the Chiefs and the Bears at noon. Preseason game number one. You saw some of the Chiefs up at camp. Tell me who you're looking forward to seeing. What are you excited about watching when it comes to the Chiefs in their first preseason game?
The rookies. I mean, I feel like Juju Smith-Schuster is somebody that is really impressed and shown a lot as far as his consistency and his hands and everything. And so I want to see how he and Mahomes work in a game situation. But, again, I'm not going to really see that until you're seeing better competition, more game planning. So, for me, I want to see how George Karlaftis rushes. I want to see how Trent McDuffie covers. I want to see how Sky Moore, what he's able to do in the passing game. Some of these younger guys, you know, like Joshua Williams, curious about what he can do, and Leo Chenal. And, you know, it's they've got a really promising group. And I give Brett Veach, his people, the scouts, the coaches, everybody who watched film, they've got a great promising class here of guys that – and I think it's – you're not going to see it all in the first preseason game, but you want to see some glimpses. You want to see some flashes. And so that's what I'm looking for.
Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah, he's in that too, in there too.
I'm so intrigued because they just seem to love him.
Yeah.
But you don't really know what the – I mean, it's all these guys, but, like, I want to see him in a full game where it's tackle you all the way to the ground and all that stuff.
Yeah, but you don't know because it's even more because he's a seventh-round pick,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like, you have more faith in the guys that picked in the first and second rounds.
Right.
But a seventh-round – because you the thing is – We go through this, and you know this, Nate, you know this, Jeff. Every year, there's a couple of training camp darlings that the media falls in love with, yep, because we get bored. We want to try to, you know, be out front on the first, you know, hey, I was the first guy to talk about this guy. We all go through it. The national media comes in. Every single guy from NFL Network and ESPN and the national guys and the Ringer, every one of them left camp. The guy to keep your eye on is Isaiah Pacheco, which means someone in Chiefs PR said, hey, you got to check out Isaiah Pacheco. Right? Hey, check out this Isaiah Pacheco. That was everyone's three things I saw at camp. Number one, Isaiah Pacheco, written by Brad G. And so you're trying by Ted Cruz. You're trying to be, right, caution yourself against that.
That's right. These are not the running backs you're looking for.
Right. You're trying.
This is the running back you're looking for.
You're trying to caution yourself from falling for that, you know, falling for the old banana in the tailpipe. Yeah. Justin Watson is another guy. First, Mahomes started talking about how fast he is. Dave Tobe loves him. Andy Reid said, yeah, he's really building a relationship with Patrick Mahomes. And so, you know, but those are the guys you want to see. So Isaiah Pacheco and Justin Watson and Josh Williams, the fourth round corner. Through the three darlings of camp, we want to see what they can do now. I know it's a preseason game, but still they're going up against other guys. But we caution ourselves against those camp darlings, right? We don't want to buy into the hype because that always happens.
Oh, yeah. And then the cut down day comes. They start actually getting the first week of the season, and you don't hear from them again. Yeah, it's a great point to be made there. I just feel like this is the last couple of drafts the Chiefs have had. They've been very pragmatic. And I think the first couple drafts they've had, they were trying to – you know, this sounds drastic to say, hit home runs. I think that they were reaching and trying to fill gaps that they knew they had in a championship caliber team. And I think the last couple drafts have been, hey, we're going to get guys that we know can play in this league for 10 years, be solid players, be productive contributors. And so that's, I think a lot of these guys have characteristics like a Creed Humphrey, like a Nick Bolton, like Legarius Sneed. And so that is when you really start to get into that next chapter of the Patrick Mahomes career of, like, these are the guys who are going to give him a chance to win a championship down the road.
Jeff, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you tonight at the Midland.
Yeah, same here. Can't wait to be there.
And wear pants, no shorts. You got to wear pants.
I got you.
Jeff Chedia. Always looking to wear shorts instead of pants. Not tonight. We'll be back after this with Gary Pinkel on WHB.